Nick DeSebastian is the new steward of bluegrass in Atlanta. A longtime touring musician, he recently settled down here. He and his co-conspirators at the Vista Room have developed an 8-week jam session and concert series called Bluegrass and Beyond that's happening every Wednesday. Their second installment is tonight, featuring music of Jerry Garcia and David Grisman. Producer Gabby Watt spoke with Nick about the series and bluegrass.
How did you, I guess, what attracted you to bluegrass?
I had some friends in my town where I grew up that listened to it, and they encouraged me to go to a festival, and I think the communal element of it was really exciting. The energy of it was really exciting, and that there were people from all generations playing it was appealing to me. I remember the first few festivals I went to, I saw a lot of young people that were up on stage playing. I thought, I guess I could probably do this. And I liked the sound of the music, and I liked all the culture that surrounded it. So I started learning it. I was first drawn to the excitement and the flash of the guitar playing, because I was a guitar player, and that linked me up with someone in Pennsylvania, a good buddy named Joe Hillman. Joe's a little bit older, and he taught me the value of singing and of having a grand repertoire and being able to play with people in a jam setting. I've moved away from bluegrass at times in my life, but it's always kind of the most deeply rooted style that I relate to. It's what I spent the most time growing up playing, and so it's kind of like the bedrock of my musical knowledge.
It's fun because every instrument gets a turn.
Yeah, there aren't too many musics where everyone's playing at the same time, and that it's if you're not taking a solo, you're playing an accompaniment part. So yeah, that was all of those things were really appealing about bluegrass to me.
Unless you're the bass player, of course.
Yeah, you don't get too many solos as a bass player.
Yeah,
stuck in the back.
So why did you, when you came to Atlanta, you noticed that there was not, or you were looking for a bluegrass event, a weekly event, but you didn't find one. So was that surprising for you that there wasn't something that already existed like this?
Not really. Curating something like this is not, it's a pretty big undertaking, and we're just getting into week two of it, and I'm constantly working on getting more people to know about it and encouraging them to come out. So it wasn't surprising, because this sort of thing takes a lot of work. And everywhere in this country, there are people that like bluegrass music, but facilitating a gathering is not a given. So I was seeking it for the sake of the town, to meet people and to get people playing, but also for myself to have an outlet, a weekly outlet, to do this sort of thing, to play music with friends and to have a jam and just have this regular occurrence of people getting together to see what can happen.
And so I guess what actually goes into curating an event, I guess you have to find the musicians,
yeah.
Build the repertoire.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I was approached by Mike Rizzi, who's a drummer in town, and he is sort of he's the brains of the talent buying side of the Vista Room, which is this beautiful new venue we're playing at. And he approached me on a Thursday. Colonel Bruce Hampton plays there every Thursday, and I was playing mandolin with him one night. And Mike Rizzi came up and he said, "Man, I love that mandolin playing, and I have a bluegrass mind tonight. Would you want to conspire with me in getting this up and running?" And I was so psyched, because I had the same sort of thing in mind. So we spent a fair amount of time hashing out the details of the time that we'd be playing in the night, which night of the week we'd do it, how we'd do the cover charge, how we'd wrangle the musicians, and how we wanted to put a jam in the front end of it. So once Mike and I worked out the details, it was then a matter of getting musicians who were on board, and that didn't take too long. People mm-hmm. were pretty psyched about it. And now it's just trying to get people to come out who would find it appealing.
Well, what's the jam? I guess what happens at the jams?
So the jam is going to be the hour preceding the show. And these jams happen at bluegrass festivals where people are just walking around and there might be one or two people playing, and others see it and approach it with a really funny unspoken tradition of, "Hey, can I join? And you kind of, you know, you try to make eyes with someone and they'll give you the nod, like, come on in. And usually it's very welcoming. And so a jam that is not at a bluegrass festival is kind of the same way, where people come and they know it's a safe place to play and meet people and try things out. And so that's what's going to be happening before the show. Anyone is invited that plays, and it's an acoustic jam, so it's can't really get too loud or out of hand. But they're fun. You know, people bring the songs they've been writing or the songs they've been working on singing, and it's very communal and very welcoming.
I guess it's helpful if the songs are about two chords.
Yeah, three chords typically is the standard. But, you know, bluegrass is harmonically simple music. There aren't often many chords, and rhythmically it's very straight ahead. But there's a lot of depth that goes into the feel of it and knowing the traditions of what different bands have sounded like and how they've kind of broken new ground. And so one band might play the same song, but it could sound very different. And going to a jam, sometimes those subtleties get kind of diluted, and it's like the jam has its own sound. But that's the beauty of what happens when people come together and unique groups of people play for the first time.
There's a picture of one of your set list at one of the events, and it was kind of funny because all the songs minus three were in major keys, usually like G, A, E, you know, not that many accidentals. Could you talk a little bit more about the depth that you were talking about? Because, you know, on the surface, it does seem a lot of bluegrass does seem kind of sounds kind of similar sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I think as the music is moving forward, people are doing... they're adding more chords and adding special hits and arrangement ideas that are differentiating the songs. But I almost relate more to the old first generation, second generation bluegrass, where the songs are, like I said, harmonically simple. They might just have a 1, 4, and 5 chord. But the feel and the vibe is so different from band to band. Say, kind of the two kingpin bands are Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys, and then Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and the Foggy Mountain Boys. And those two bands, they were playing a lot of the same repertoire. At one point, Lester and Earl were in Bill Monroe's band, but they split, and Bill Monroe's band kind of stuck to this more driving sound. It's tough to put into words.
Music's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, but Lester's and Earl's band had more of a swing and a bounce to it. And it was a little more smooth, whereas Bill Monroe kind of had this ferocity to his music. And so hitting on those elements is really, it takes a lot of dialing in. And when you listen to it, thinking, okay, how does this band make me feel as opposed to this band? How can I channel that energy? And it's not quite as easy as saying, oh, okay, we'll just put a bunch of different chords in it to make it sound different. But really kind of tapping into how people felt the music.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, thinking about jazz or the Great American Songbook, where music was more rooted in covering these standards, because, you know, this was great repertoire that people had created. So, I mean, I guess it is a much more, like, it's a historical type of music in some respects.
Yeah, it's a traditional American music, which is, what, only 70 years old now. But that's still, it's a homegrown music. And there's a huge standard repertoire within it.
And I think it's kind of fun as well is that you can have these tunes in major keys, but sometimes the lyrics are very depressing.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's on even Doc Watson's kids album. Like, there's that song Mole in the Ground.
I was a mole in the ground.
Yeah, which when you listen to it, it's just kind of silly and fun and peppy, but then, I don't know, the lyrics are very sad.
Yeah, there's this one I did the other day called Jimmy Brown the Newsboy, and it's another one that comes up on children's albums. It's about a young boy delivering the news, and it's got this nice major feel to it, but you listen to the lyrics, and it's like this kid is just kind of being deceived about if he just keeps delivering the news, it'll all come together for him one day, and it really doesn't at the end of the song. He still has this optimistic attitude, but everyone knows that it's not going to turn into anything for him.
Poor kid.
Yeah, poor Jimmy.
I sell the morning paper, sir. My name is Jimmy. Jimmy Brown. Everybody knows that I'm a newsboy of the town. You can hear me yelling, Morning Star, needed on the street. Got no hat up on my head, no shoes on my feet.
So when you're actually building the repertoire for the nights, I know some of the nights you're going to be actually highlighting certain musicians. So kind of, I guess, with the band, how do you decide which songs you actually want to do?
So we have a standard bluegrass band is 5 members, sometimes 6, sometimes 4, but we're sticking with the 5. Guitar, mandolin, bass, banjo, and then some weeks we have dobro and some weeks we have fiddle. And if we're basing the night on honoring a musician or a group of musicians, like this Wednesday we're doing Jerry Garcia and David Grisman, we kind of look at their entire repertoire that they recorded and that they're known for, and then I'll get in touch with the people in the band who sing. There's 3 of us who sing, and we all just kind of throw down the songs that we know within that artist's repertoire and build the set list that way, and I kind of ordered the songs based on the key and the feel. I wouldn't want to put 5 minor songs next to each other, so I'll split it up and kind of try to mix in fast songs with slow songs and keep it exciting so that it doesn't all sound the same. And we'll usually run through it before the show, and we stick pretty close to it, but anything can happen and someone might just start playing something different in the middle of the set and we roll with it. That's a fun element of the night. It's not a polished, rehearsed band that's putting on the same show night after night to promote an album or promote like a product of a band. It's a local band, and the lineup often changes, so I like there to be spontaneity within the set list as well and have an open mind about what can happen, or we can change arrangements and stretch it out and see where the song goes.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for coming
and
talking
about
bluegrass.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.